둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, New Year's resolutions can feel overwhelming when they're about reinventing yourself. But the new year doesn't require a new you, maybe just a less burdened you. And therapy can be a powerful tool for that. It can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back through an unbiased perspective, so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And that understanding can lead to real change. For me, one of the things I'm always working to let go of is the pressure to have everything figured out all the time. Personally, professionally, creatively, that idea that you're supposed to always be moving forward with total clarity, that can be heavy. Learning how to unpack where that pressure comes from, that can make a real difference. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. You can just fill out a short questionnaire about your needs and preferences, and they do the matching work for you. With over 12 years of experience, more than 30,000 therapists, over 5 million people served worldwide, they typically get it right the first time. And if they don't, you can switch to another therapist from their tailored recommendations. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
After the holidays, there's so much to clean up and get ready for the coming year. This leaves me exhausted and a lot of things falling off my to-do list. It's time to lock in, and Omaha Steaks delivers everything you crave to reset after the holidays. An order from them means having high-quality Omaha Steaks on hand at all times. I'm a big meat lover myself, and I always go with medium rare, but there's also plenty of poultry and other options available. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to www.omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale and use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. Thanks to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring us.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. If you're not already a subscriber to the series, I hope you do hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now, especially if you're a fan of interviews and a big old music nerd like most of us. We put out interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday over at Consequence of Sound. Would love to keep you up to date. Of course, you can subscribe anywhere you get your favorite podcast from. That includes iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as YouTube. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, one of my all-time favorite artists. I can't tell you how excited I am about this one, Mr. Nick Lowe. He's once again got together with Low Straight Jackets for a new EP, the Love Starvation Trombone EP, which we will talk about quite a bit, the songs here, like Love Starvation and Trombone, as well as one of the covers on there called Raincoat in a River. We'll hear how the entire collaboration with Low Straight Jackets came about, and where they plan on taking it, too. This isn't the only. I mean, there was an EP last year. They had the one this year. There's probably going to be another one down the road as well. Nick Lowe will tell us how he's been reconnecting with his past to make new music and new sounds. And speaking of that past, of course, we're going to hit on some classic records like The Impossible Bird that came out in 94. And maybe his most famous, at least here stateside, the Labor of Lust record that, of course, had Cruel to Be Kind on it, came out the same day Dave Edmunds' Repeat When Necessary. It was the same day because it was the same band. These are Rockpile Records. We'll get some of the history on that as well. There's also a bio coming out later this summer. Nick's not writing it himself, but it turns out he is a big part of it. Although I'll say that line with an asterisk, which seems to be par for the course for a lot of what Nick Lowe says. There's usually an asterisk involved. It's a quality rock and roll interview. It's Kyle Meredith with Nick Lowe.
Oh, Kyle, hello. It's Nick here, Nick Lowe, calling from London.
The show is coming up. We're going to have you in right here in Louisville, KY, September 26th. You're on the tour with, of course, Low Straight Jackets with you and the Mavericks on that bill as well at the Brown Theater. That's a really perfect bill, too. I feel like what you're doing right now with the Low Straight Jackets and the sound that the Mavericks have, I mean, that kind of makes this whole, I don't know, aurally themed sound for the night. Is that just a coincidence?
I suppose it's a coincidence, yeah. Can it really be? You know, no, what am I talking about? I would think probably there's been high-level talks to get us on this bill, and I'm really pleased about it. I think you're right. I think it's a super bill.
Now, this continues the quality rock and roll review that you've been on. What makes up a quality rock and roll review?
Well, it started really when I first got together with the Straitjackets, who I've known for years anyway, you know, just on the circuit, so to speak. But it comes from about 6 years ago. I released a Christmas record, which to everyone's surprise and delight did very well, especially in the United States. But shortly after it was released, I lost two very close friends who I toured with and worked with for a long time. Bobby Irwin, my drummer, who played drums with me for years, and Neil Brockbank, who used to co-produce the records and tour with me. And it kind of took the wind out of my sails, but it was the great thing about a Christmas record, as you I'm sure know, is that, as the cliche goes, it's the gift that keeps on giving, you know. So every year when it rolls round, you know, you can put it out again. And the next year came round, and it was suggested that I might do some shows with Lost Straitjackets, a Christmas tour with Lost Straitjackets, which we did. And we called it the Quality Holiday Review because the Christmas record was called Quality Street, which is a sort of a joke, in-joke over here, in that there is a make of candy over here called Quality Street, which is, well, I won't say what I think of this stuff, but it comes out every Christmas. It comes out every Christmas. It's massively popular, this Quality Street. Now, I don't think anyone buys it at any other time of the year. So I called the Christmas record Quality Street. And so quality, as you say, and holiday, you know, seem to kind of rhyme. Quality and holiday don't sound quite as good in an English accent.
So now, you know, you've got the rock and roll side of it and everything. And I've loved what you all have been doing so far with it, with the Straitjackets. You know, of course, you know, we did love the Christmas album, too, and the EP that came out last year. Now we have the second one, which I got to tell you, Love Starvation, it quickly went to one of my favorite Nick Lowe songs. It's in that top platform right there.
I'm really pleased. Yeah, it's having a little moment over here as well, which I'm extremely pleased about, and also really quite surprised. But that's wonderful. Yeah, and the thing is with it's a really good pairing with the Straitjackets. Now, of course, we've done this for quite a long time. We did the Christmas show for about 3 years, and then that got not exactly old, you know, but we thought we'd kind of done it, you know. But then we started to get offers to do out-of-season work, you might say, and that's when really things started taking off, and I started writing songs for the project, and Love Starvation was one of them. And now we've really got it rolling, and now I'm pleased to say.
It's such a great pop song, and I'll say that about a handful of the songs on this as well. I've heard you say that the trick is not to overthink a song, and I think I'm still surprised in that, because even when you get a song that comes across as simple, like Love Starvation, there's still a lot of depth and tricks in that track. I mean, how do you find the balance?
I actually put a lot of thought into making it sound like I didn't put any thought into it, if you see what I mean. It can take weeks to make it sound like you just made it up. And you've got to be careful that you don't, as I said, overthink it, you know, because then you get into this sort of kind of cutesy pie, clever stuff that if you think about it too much. So you've got to, as you say, get a balance. And I don't know how you get that balance. So the rule of thumb to me is that I think the song's finished if I think I'm singing a cover. If I can't really hear any trace of me left in the song, or what I think is me, you know, any of my little tricks and things, which, you know, my fans kind of like, but I don't like them so much. So you've got to get a balance to keep it so that, you know, your people don't get put off, but also it can, you know, it's something that you feel you can perform anytime, anywhere.
You reminded me the people who... you know, you said you work a long time to make it sound like you didn't think a lot on it. That's like the people with their hair who spend like an hour in the mirror to make it look like, you know, they just woke up out of bed and rolled away. That's the unfortunate parallel I'm drawing here. another song that, you know, the other song in here that I love so much that almost gets the other star attention outside of Love Starvation is the song Trombone. And a trombone is not what one usually thinks of within a romance song, but that is your instrument of choice here. What brought that on?
I know. A trombone is a real weird one. I mean, I remember when I first... It just sounded good. You know, it just sounded good. The word, you know, so I was right. I came up with this simple tune, and I thought it sounded like a Neil Diamond song. You know, I could hear, come play your song, you know, that sort of sounds like the kind of thing he'd do. And the word that I kept on doing, because a lot of songwriters will tell you the same thing, that you start off making noises, you know, and then one of these noises that you're making that feel good, you know, will turn into a word and will give you an idea for how the song goes. But I kept on doing it. Come play your song. And as you say, when I thought, well, this sounds like trombone, you know, does this really work? Does people really want to hear trombone? And I tried to persuade myself, well, of course they do, you know, and a trombone's played right, you know, sounds real soulful, and, you know, but I agree with you, you know, it's not the first instrument that comes to mind. And for that reason, I sat on this song for a while because I thought it was a bit, well, as you just said, you know, didn't something about it. Well, I thought it was kind of cool that it was called trombone, but I didn't know if it really worked. And I actually played it to my friend, J.D. McPherson. Well, I played him this. I said, J.D., what do you think of this? I've got this little idea. This is way before I'd finished it. And I saw his sort of face become more and more horrified. And and he's and take on this kind of rictus smile, you know, a half of terror, you know, like a chimpanzee, you know, like a chimpanzee goes when it's frightened. And he said, yeah, that's pretty good. And then I thought, oh, God, this isn't going to work. You know, he didn't need to say anything, so I sat on it again for another year, you know, and then I got it out, and everybody else seemed to like it. So there we are.
So it's JD's fault that we didn't hear it until now. I'm gonna remember
yeah,
that
I
one.
I entirely blame JD. I entirely blame him.
Now, I noticed for the single artwork for Trombone, you used an animated version of a Herb Albert cover, right?
Yeah, that was the idea. Yeah, it certainly had that sort of feel. Yeah,
I kind of wonder, you know, as you write about characters through the years, do you find that there's a central character on this EP, because there's a bit of a lovelorn theme, and then we possibly get the turnaround with the cover at the end with a raincoat and a river?
Yeah, there isn't really. It's too hard to write songs really and with a theme, you know, to have something riding through them, linking them all. I find it really quite hard to do it, at least to write something that I think stands up, you know, and is fun and has got some bottom, you know. And what can I say? Well, the older I get, there seems to be no end to the possibilities of what love and the lack of it do to people. How they, you know, it makes them go mad, really, in some cases. And I find it an endless possibilities for songwriting, because you can invent a character. You know, I'm not a diary, putting my diary to music sort of songwriter. You know, I make it up. And if you make up a character doing it, you know, so much the better. You can make the character do almost anything. But I know what it feels like to have your heart broken or to feel slighted and lied to, and even to have lied to someone. You know, I've experienced all the good and bad things about it, so I know what I'm singing about. But I do tend to make up characters in my songs and have them do it.
Well, it's nice how it works on this, because maybe, you know, by coincidence or unintentional, I do feel like there is like I said, it feels like there's a character, and then we get to that cover with Raincoat and a River, and I don't really know how it ends up for this person, but it feels like maybe there's some slight turnaround for them by the end of it, so maybe life's going to get better. That's how I at least hear the EP.
Well, it's a great song. I wish I'd written it. It's a great song. I heard it, the version by Sammy Taylor, that a friend of mine brought round to the house one day, and I thought, oh boy, that's a real cracker. You know, I think I could have a go at doing that one. And it is. It's a sweet sentiment, and it's sort of tough and tender. You know, there's something that I like those songs when you can find them. Yeah. It's a great combination.
You know, a lot of artists, as you progress through your career and you get older, it seems like a lot of artists, and I won't try to project straight to you, but it seems a lot of folks do try to go back to their earliest roots, not maybe their first albums, but even before then, you know, the stuff they came up on, and try to find something new to spin to those sounds. I mean, we see that with Dylan, with the crooner stuff right now, and I feel like, you know, Willie's been doing it as well a little bit. With Love Starvation and a couple of these songs, and especially with a song as, you know, as old as that one right there with Raincoat and River, do you find that you're doing that as well, that you're going back to those pre-career sounds that you grew up on and trying to mine those?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think so. I've really liked or seen the wisdom of not playing loud for quite a long time. When I started out making my own records, you know, we used to play loud, really, and Rockpile was a loud group, and it's fun to do that. But when you're a kid, you know, but when you get older, it's you suddenly realize that you can't really do some of the things that you fell in love with when you were listening to music when you were a kid. You know, the stuff that influenced you, which wasn't played loud. You know, for instance, you can't really swing loud, and swing is an element in music which is really out of fashion now. It'll come back again, but because most pop music, in pop music I'm talking about really, because most pop music is made with drum machines, and this is, I'm not going to make another boring, you know, rant about drum machine music, because there's great records made on drum machines, but they don't swing. And most pop music is made with them, you know. So that's why there's a whole generation that's come. In fact, a lot of younger people get sort of embarrassed when they hear things swing. You know, they think it's really kind of creepy. But I think it's the sort of magical ingredient in music which fascinated me when I was a kid. How one person can play this thing and then another person plays that thing, and they and the two things they're doing sort of act against each other, or and act against and with each other, and produce this amazing sort of musical phenomenon. And you can't induce that if you play loud. So for quite a long time now, I've been championing this to play quiet. And I'm in a position to be able to get a, you know, turn it up a little bit, turn it back down again. You know, I don't quite know how to explain it, really, but it's not I'm not on some sort of trip of right now I can do stuff from the stuff I grew up on, because I incorporate that all the time as well, you know, and mix it up to my own recipe.
It seemed like, as history has painted it, the turnaround for, you know, kind of rediscovering that style came from the Impossible Bird record, which happens to be, you know, 25 years this year. This seemed like this was a big record for you.
I can't believe it.
25th anniversary. That was, wow. But it was a big turnaround for you, right? Like a kind of a comeback record, I guess?
Yeah, yes, I think you could definitely say that. I'd been thinking about this sort of playing, you know, sort of rocking hard whilst hardly rocking, you know, this sort of theory, you know, on a previous record to that. I did a record called Pinker and Prouder, and I tried to do this this kind of thing on that record, but I couldn't really get anyone to sort of believe that I meant it, you know, at the time. And as a result, I managed to do some pretty good tracks on that record. But The Impossible Bird was the first one when I actually had some people, you know, who knew what I was talking about and went with it. And to try and get this kind of very, it's not for everyone, but I had nothing to lose at that point. You know, I wanted to do something that sounded really homemade, you know, and kind of basic but soulful. And not trying to cop any act, you know, particularly, just with a different variety of music. And I can't believe that you just told me it's 25 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's I think the actual release date's later in the year. If I don't have that part written down, but yeah, that'll celebrate the 25th. And then with, you know, while I'm making you feel, you know, quite a bit older, if that's the case, I mean, it is also the 40th anniversary of Labor of Lust, and I'm sure someone's pointed that out. You know, Labor of Lust and Repeat When Necessary just turned 40. Go something
wow.
like that. Yeah, so they keep coming.
No, I wasn't aware of that either, but that is amazing. Yes, because we recorded those two at the sort of. At the same time, practically, when that was Rockpile, mm-hmm. you know, we only actually did one Rockpile album, but we made loads of records as Rockpile. We just weren't allowed to call ourselves Rockpile for contractually, but both of those records were Rockpile records. And it wasn't until they released Labor of Lust a couple of years ago that they got the original tapes out. That they discovered that we'd actually done the two records at the same time. I think we were doing Labor of Lust in the daytime and going back in the evening and doing in the evening. Seems incredible now. We, you know, that they're actually so good.
I mean, was it hard to keep that all straight? Did you know that you were making two records? Did you have to put a, you know, marker in the sand?
No, we didn't know, really. I mean, it was such an exciting time, and we were so thrilled, you know, that we were getting noticed and having all this. Well, it seemed to be success on our own terms. You know, we were the Rockpile were the go-to opening act. You know, we opened for everybody. And usually they were either people who were right at the top of their game or they were on the way out. And generally the people who were on the way out, they didn't like the fact that we, you know, had such a good reaction. They liked the fact that we were the opening act on their tour, but they didn't really like the fact that we were doing so well. So they'd cut our time down. And it's the worst thing you can do, really, to a band, is to cut their time down, because all they do is play their best tunes, you know, and then kind of leave the stage kind of, you know, shrugging their shoulders and looking sorrowfully at their watches, you know, as if to say, I'm sorry, you know, sorry, we can't play anymore, while the crowd goes wild. And we loved that, and also felt that we never wanted really to be in a position where we weren't the opening act. You know, we were having too much fun to ever want that, you know, to have to do 2 or 3 hour sets and, you know, and actually work for a living. You know, we didn't think we were actually doing much work, but in fact we were. We were doing a lot of recording and doing these tours when we had a ball. So it was a very exciting time for us, and you know, it just flew by.
I mean, when you look at that 1 year alone, and I think you can pick several of them around there, but, I mean, 79, not only did you put out those two records, but, you know, Costello's Armed Forces came out that year. I think that was the same year that you were part of Carlene's record. I mean, it's just, it on paper, it looks insane, because to think, and also you toured. Like, I don't know how anyone would have made it through all of that.
I know. It does seem unbelievable now. When you know, I sort of stroke my chin and scratch my head, you know, and might be able to record one or two tracks, you know, maybe in 6 months. You know, we used to knock them out back then. And as you say, to all the touring as well. In fact, I probably wouldn't be talking to you if it hadn't been for all that touring we did as Rockpile. Because even now, people, you just got to mention the word. You know, we do, with the Straitjackets, we do an old Rockpile song, and I say, this is an old Rockpile song, and the people go absolutely crazy. And also, people who weren't even born when we were going, who are in the audience, the reputation of the group is, you know, way in excess of how good we were, really. Thank God we never actually got back together again. You know, people could have seen how hopeless it was. No, we weren't. On our night, we were really pretty good, you know, but we certainly had our ups and downs.
Yeah, well, it is some fantastic music. Whatever name is on it, you know, Rockpile or your own. I read that there's a bio coming out in August. Is that just someone else is doing that, or are you involved with that?
Well, I didn't intend to be involved in it. It's written by a friend of mine called Will Birch, and it's taken him about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years to do it. But when he asked me if he could do it, I was flattered when he asked me. But I really didn't want him to, because I think that stuff should come out after you're dead, you know, so there's actually an end to the story. But he's a friend of mine, as I say, and he's written some other books that have done well, music books. He wrote a biography of Ian Dury and sort of several other things. And I actually thought, well, he'll give up on this. when he starts it, he'll realize it's, you know, he's on a loser here. And then I thought, well, because he just kept on doing it, you know, and I thought, well, he's not going to give up. He'll never get a publisher. That's what I thought. So don't, relax, everybody. It'll never come out. And my intention was to be rather aloof from it. You know, I didn't really care. He was interviewing everybody I knew, you know, and I didn't really mind what anyone said about me. In fact, quite honestly, you know, the more outrageous, the better. You know? So that was my intention. But then he called me up one day and invited me to lunch because he dug up some stuff about my family, about my, you know, going back a few generations, which was fascinating to me. I had no idea about it, and it was extraordinary. And next thing I knew, he got me in there and he started to ask me questions about my dad, you know, and my mother. And I was happy to talk about them. But that was all that needed to happen. You know, next thing, oh, my God, you know, I'm talking about Dave Edmunds and, you know, so I got kind of reeled into it. So I have had something to do with it, but kind of unwillingly, you know, I've done my best, but I haven't exactly been wholehearted in my encouragement of it. But I won't be reading it. I definitely won't be reading it. But I don't know what else to say about it. Really.
No, it's all right. I'll be reading it. And you know, when you come to town, I'll at least give you the thumbs up or thumbs down. I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I mean, you know, even if it's the semi-official story, I mean, you've had such an interesting career. Your songs that you've written have meant a lot to many of us. So to, you know, to have the story in one spot, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know. Do you read other artist biographies? Because I sure love them when I have an artist that, you know, I'm close to their music.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing, actually. I do. And also, I can watch a documentary on the TV about anybody, even if I can't, you know, I've got no interest in their in the group, you know, or the artist. I can watch a documentary about anybody. I think it's always fascinating. Although I'm much more interested in the early years. I don't really care once they're hobnobbing with the Hollywood celebrity and the glitterati. You know, I don't really care much about that. But I love reading about sort of people's early days. It's fascinating.
Well, I'll look forward to that book. And then, again, you know, let me promote the show here, too. September 26th with Low Straight Jackets and the Mavericks at the Brown Theater. They got the new EP out. This sets you up for a trilogy. Everybody loves a trilogy if there's another EP coming.
I think there probably will be. Yes, I've got a few things that we haven't recorded yet, which we've been doing live. Because, you know, I don't want to make it just a sort of the Straitjackets are by no means my backing group or anything like that. You know, this is something we really do together. So although we do a number of you know, tunes that people know of mine, I couldn't possibly not do Cruel to Be Kind, you know, or four or five others, you know, that people know. But there's a lot of, you know, it's supposed to sound like it's relevant for today rather than some retro tribute act or something. Tribute act with the original bloke in it.
Right.
That would be a kind of dismal. So, we keep the EPs coming out and keep new tunes and put them in and see if people like them. You know, I don't sort of tell people, this is a new song. That's, you know, one of the most dismal phrases in the English language. You know, I think we're going to do a new one now. So we'll just do the new stuff and not tell anyone, you know, and see how it goes down.
Well, again, when they're as good as the ones you've given so far, I don't think anybody's minding. I'm certainly not on this side. Nick, it has been an honor and a pleasure talking to you today. I look forward to having you guys in town, and thanks so much for the conversation.
Not at all, Kyle. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We'll see you soon.
I hope so.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Oh, man. My thanks to Nick Lowe right there. Again, the latest EP is called Love Starvation Trombone, sort of a double A-side sort of thing, on tour this fall with Low Straight Jackets and the Mavericks. And thanks to you, by the way, for making it to the end of the interview. Before you get out of here, hit that subscribe button. Again, you can do so at iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You can do it at Spotify or YouTube, whatever's comfortable for you. Wherever you're listening from right now, there's probably a subscribe button in front of you. After that, you can head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook/Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition of Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assisted customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.